Okay, good morning. My name is Emily Coulter Thompson, and I'm here from the Oregon Health Authority Public Health Division, which is in Portland, so I didn't have too far to travel. And my background in doing this work is I was a survivor advocate for about 10 years before joining public health. I worked with local domestic and sexual violence organizations and state coalitions in Ohio, Michigan, and now Oregon. And in 2006, joined the public health division and have worked there in a variety of roles, which led me to my current role, which is as the partnerships coordinator. And I'm fortunate to be here today to tell you about the work we've done in assessing the public health division's partnerships between family violence or domestic and sexual violence and public health. Since it's a passion of mine, I was really excited to be asked to do this project. And the public health division basically is the state public health department in Oregon. I don't have any relationships to disclose. So starting with the scope of the problem, I'm guessing that those of you who are here this morning, you already know the severity of domestic and sexual violence. Here, a little bit of data from Oregon. We have seen an increase of intimate partner violence, homicide in Oregon. You can see from 2008 to 2010, there was an increase that has drawn a lot of media attention and definitely increased the political will for looking at intimate partner violence. And in 2010, 1 in 5 homicides in Oregon were a result of intimate partner violence. Also, among all the female homicide victims that year who were 15 years and older, 46%, so nearly half, were killed by intimate partners. So this definitely shows that intimate partner violence is a severe public health problem. And here are some more data from the new National Intimate Partner Violence Sexual Violence Survey, NISVIS, from Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It shows, I think the most alarming statistic here is that over 50% of women in Oregon have experienced sexual violence other than rape. So that could be sexual coercion, voyeurism, any number of sexually abusive behaviors. And the CDC does say that the sample sizes are still small for the state-level data and confidence intervals, and comparing state-level data, there's still some hesitation around that. But still, I think it's worthy to note that this is our starting figure in Oregon, and it's not too far off from the national percentages here either. So again, this is lifetime prevalence for women, showing, again, this is a very significant public health issue. An issue that I think deserves as much attention as other public health issues with a lot of importance, such as immunization, obesity prevention, tobacco prevention, and certainly there are connections between those and violence experience early in life. We know that from the Adverse Childhood Experience Survey and other forms of data as well. So in our project, we were really looking at what is the public health role in addressing domestic and sexual violence. We know historically criminal legal systems, medical systems, social service systems have addressed this issue pretty well. Public health, our role has been overlooked historically. Until recently, the Safe States Alliance, which is an alliance of injury prevention professionals, produced a report last fall. And they identified some recommendations for what local and state public health could be doing around this issue. So we used this report to guide our work. Actually, the Public Health Division Director, Dr. Mel Cohn, was part of an expert panel to help develop those recommendations. So we're really fortunate to have his expertise and inspiration for this project. Our approach was to do what's called a partnerships analysis, what we're calling it. And it's a way of assessing our partners with other multidisciplinary sectors. So in addition to family violence, we're looking at transportation, education, and housing. And we're taking a health and all policies perspective. And health and all policies is basically saying that public health alone cannot set all the policies to improve health. The outcomes are too... it would take too much for us to do it on our own. So we need to involve other sectors and help them improve their policy making to improve health outcomes. In this analysis in particular, we took a primary prevention lens to violence prevention, so looking at how to stop it before it ever starts. And it was funded by the Strengthening Public Health Infrastructure to Improve Health Outcomes grant from CDC. And that grant is also funding things like public health accreditation and performance management. The objectives in this project were to assess partnerships and do a scan of what work are we already doing in Oregon at the local, state, and tribal public health levels, and then develop some recommendations for what public health's role is in preventing domestic and sexual violence. For the purpose of the project, we used the definition domestic and sexual violence as an umbrella term to encompass all the forms that you see here, acknowledging that this is really a lifespan issue, so a continuum of behaviors across the lifespan. Terminology is always a challenging thing. We're still a little bit in flux in defining and how we define it. Now we're using the term family violence more often. The methods included doing a literature review of promising practices in prevention, a scan, as I said, of the activities at the local, state, and tribal public health levels, and interviews. Our main way of gathering information about those activities were talking to people. So mostly public health staff, and then partners who were based at local, state, and national sexual and domestic violence organizations. We asked those partners, what is public health's role in preventing domestic and sexual violence? What do you think public health should be doing that would be distinct from people in other sectors, so in the legal system, medical, in healthcare, as opposed to public health? And with public health staff in particular, we asked them, what do you think the opportunities are for preventing violence? So I talked to almost every manager in our division, from people who are looking at environmental health, emergency preparedness, and tried to generate some brainstorming about what are the connections. So even if you're not already doing something, what are the possibilities? And asked, how do you think trauma impacts your program outcomes? And with the partners, we asked, do you know about the public health model for violence prevention? Do you know about what public health does, the scope of our services and prevention work? And asked, what do you think we could do to be a better partner? If we're not already at the table, why not, and how could we get there? How could we be value added at the table? The literature review showed the promising practices that you see here. So looking at early childhood home visiting programs have been shown to be effective. Hospital-based education, like talking about reducing shaken baby syndrome. School-based curricula, such as safe dates or the fourth R. And healthcare screening that happens in clinical settings, that could include public health settings. So public health has a role in all of these. And I do want to mention that the literature for promising practices in this field is relatively young, and we don't have a lot of evidence that's published so far about what's effective. We're still working on that. But there is a lot of practice-based evidence that especially the community partners that we interviewed wanted to emphasize that be counted too, since you don't always get a chance to document the good work that people are doing in communities. Our environmental scan, so we looked at the three levels of public health in Oregon, and we have 34 local public health departments and 9 federally recognized tribes. At the local level, many of the health departments are involved with a grant to support pregnant and parenting teens who've experienced violence. And in Oregon, that grant funds advocates who are co-located at public health departments, child welfare systems, and local domestic and sexual violence organizations. So that is helping to bridge these issues together. One health department has a sexual assault nurse examiner program. Another health department has done a good job incorporating their school-based education on sexual health, healthy relationships, and sometimes even tobacco education. Depending on the relationships that they had in place, they could integrate those more. In the tribal health departments, most of them have a health center or clinic, and they're doing things like screening and more direct service advocacy type work. And at the state level, we've been involved with a number of things. So producing statewide prevention plans for sexual violence prevention, intimate partner violence prevention. We have a statewide domestic violence fatality review team that we've been involved in. We run the state rape prevention and education program and a number of other things. Our interview results showed that a number of managers, so over 50% of our managers had not thought about how trauma would impact their program outcomes, which I thought was pretty shocking. So we know that the data is significant about the link between trauma and health outcomes later in life, like chronic disease. So it's definitely an area that we could explore further of how do we draw those linkages for leaders in public health. A number of them did talk about workplace issues of how violence had impacted their staff. So that might be an angle for raising the issue that is pretty close to home. With partners, most of them admitted that they didn't know about the full scope of public health and they wanted to learn more. They were very interested. And when they said that public health wasn't at the table, they said it wasn't for on purpose. It was just because public health hadn't come to mind or those relationships hadn't been established. So there's definitely a lot of potential there. They talked about public health emphasizing evidence-based practice and having some skepticism about that, because again, wanting acknowledgement of practice-based evidence and not wanting it to be only recognizing what is in published literature. And then again, they also said they valued public health's role in establishing best practice in prevention and identifying what that is. And there were varying perspectives on how much they thought public health had a social justice or anti-oppression philosophy. Our recommendations we took from the Safe States Alliance report, so we based them directly on that and adopted the ones we thought would be the most fitting for our health department. So first, institutionalizing leadership, going back to the managers that I talked about. How can we strengthen their leadership in recognizing this is a priority issue? We'd like to develop a statewide policy agenda in collaboration with partners so that we can choose where can we best invest our efforts to get the maximum impact. We definitely have a role in disseminating data and improving our surveillance with NISVIS and other state-level surveys that we do. And we'd like to build more state and local capacity. So really that's about information exchange so that public health professionals understand the impact of this issue and then people in domestic and sexual violence circles also understand what public health does. So then we can work together more effectively. As a result of this analysis, we've already made family violence prevention one of our priority areas in our state strategic plan. Our goal here is to make Oregon one of the healthiest states in the nation. So we're addressing all these other areas, but I was thrilled to see that family violence made it on the list. Some of the limitations, we could do a lot more interviews to talk about this subject, especially with survivors directly, people who've interacted with the public health system in Oregon, ask them what they think our role could be or how we could improve what we do. We could talk to more multidisciplinary partners in the legal system, healthcare, other sectors that have involvement in family violence prevention. Most of our interviews were weighted towards adolescent and adult responders for sexual and domestic violence, so we could look more at child abuse and elder abuse in particular, and then talk to more people at the local and tribal public health levels. So in summary, we concluded some of what we already knew in the beginning, which was that public health has a really important role to play in preventing domestic and sexual violence. But some of the key things that I think are unique to public health are that we can have a somewhat neutral role in convening partners. And we heard from stakeholders, so in the advocacy community in particular, that the role of the MD in the white coat is very powerful when you're at a multidisciplinary table. So we have some expertise and clout that we could use. And also, we have experience in developing policy and identifying best practices, so we can lend that support to the rest of the movement to prevent violence. And also our expertise in data. So gathering data and interpreting it and helping use that to further policy and maybe identify more resources to bring to our state. So that's it in a nutshell, and I'd be happy to answer questions at the end of our session today. Feel free to contact me also. My contact information is listed here, and I'd love to tell you more about it later. Thanks.